Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On October 19th, the Norris Group proudly presented I Survived Real Estate 2012. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and the outlook for real estate in the coming year. Over $77,000 was raised to benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners. Foreclosure Radar, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, the Investors Workshops, Invest Club for Women, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, Fry Wiles, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. Learn more about the panel and how to attend at isurvivedrealestate.com.
Doesn't the solution start becoming a lot more painful for the next generation?
Yes. Sure.
Well, when do we go, let's don't do that? That's kind of driving me crazy.
You're in a state, you're in the only state in the union that put back into office virtually every assembly person and senator in the last election. A state that has, what, a $20 billion budget deficit? And you're asking us why we're not doing something about it?
Okay, let's talk about Chapter 19 bankruptcy.
and you guys can't print money.
Yeah.
Well, no, we really can't. All right, let's talk about Chapter 19 bankruptcy. Is that the number? I think it is. I've studied it. I'm a little tired, as you can imagine. So, but
nine, right?
Nine. Thanks. I added a one. I'm glad you didn't bet me. I'd have lost a dollar. Okay. Is that a serious? Well, first of all, it's a serious problem to have a big deficit that you really maybe keep on going down that road. But Chapter 9 bankruptcy, from what I've seen, doesn't solve the biggest problem. Is that because, you know, the retirement dollars of CalPERS and stuff is sort of an untouchable item? Is that true? Is anybody knowledgeable enough to go, yeah, that's kind of true?
Well, you know, I'm not an expert on this, but you know, I know like in Vallejo and some of the places that have gone through this already, you know, it's cleared up some of the debt, but it hasn't cleared up the unfunded pension liabilities, right? So there's still this huge, you know, problem that hasn't yet been faced. And, you know, that's clearly going to continue to be an issue for cities in California, because we've got an awful lot of cities, you know, on the brink.
Well, and what it has changed is they very often don't show up first to their fires. They have other companies from other cities beat them to it because they have so few, they might be busy with one thing and they can't get to another.
You know, one of the things that really bothers me when I hear it, you know, is around the foreclosures cause price declines. But, you know, in my little hometown of Discovery Bay, they closed down the local fire department that's been there for, you know, since the place started 30 years ago. And, you know, they said they had to close it down because, you know, they'd lost so much revenue. The only problem with that is they have more revenue today than they had before the bubble. You know, revenues increased it better than rates of inflation. And, you know, what happened during the bubble is our cities and county and the states, instead of taking that revenue as this big one-time windfall, which is what it was, is they went out and spent it like it was going to continue coming forever. And that largely happened in, you know, pensions and benefits and you know, public sector pay. And it's really hard to put that genie back in the hat. But we're now losing fire departments when there's more revenue than they had before because there's not enough revenue. And, you know, there's a structural problem there that, you know, we let some of these things advance way faster than they should have. At some point, we're going to have to recognize that and deal with it. In the meantime, you know, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
But the high-speed rail line, we can get the fire department from Orange County up to Discovery Bay.
That's it.
And so you're all covered.
Right. Well, that, yeah, just it going by so fast, yeah, we'll put out the fire.
Well, it'll suck the fire right out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, they're not taking this very seriously, are they?
It's gallows humor.
It is gallows humor.
You know, all those task force where the Democrats and Republicans worked for months and they came up with a document that I took the time to read with a yellow marker? That's a meaningless document. None of that is even going to get contemplated. It was just a perfunctory.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I mean, one of the areas, we think about government growing over the last 30 years. Federal government, in terms of employment, has been shrinking. Actually, it's been pretty flat for the last 30 years, but it's gone from about 33% to about 13% of total government employment since the 1930s. It's been shrinking, actually, since the 1970s. The huge area of growth is in local government. And this gets back to Sean's point about, we've all become accustomed to a pretty high level of service in our towns, and it's expensive. We have all these people to pay and all their pensions to pay. The other thing that happened is that all these towns got talked into taking out all these bonds. Mm-hmm. So you might have no fire department, but you probably have a really nice fire building where they used to be.
Yeah.
And, there's a reason why municipal bonds have such a lower default rate than corporate bonds. Because towns can always go find the money to pay the bonds, even if they can't find the money to pay the fire department.
Go ahead.
I was going to add on that local government question is that, I don't know, you don't live in California, but one thing you might want to look at when you're trying to judge these things is take a look whether it's a local, state, and police, retirement system or Fed or the whole state or anything else, take a look at what their assumptions are about their rates of return that they're using to discount those future liabilities. And, one of the looming things, so there's two things to look at. One is to look at how underfunded the plan is, but don't just stop looking at that. Also take a look at their assumptions, because if they're assuming 8 or 9% growth rate in investments and, under pension accounting rules for corporate entities, they can't assume anything like that much. So we have a little bit of that old dynamic that some of us remember where from the 80s where there's different accounting rules in some cases. And so I think some of those assumptions that states and municipalities are making about returns are another place where you're going to see problems.
EJ, you had mentioned that to me when I was talking to you on the radio that, it's good for us when we have borrowed money against real estate. But it's really on the other side of the coin, the person that saved all their life is trying to get a yield on it. And now you have CalPERS, let's say the 12-month return for them, I'm sure it was projected that it needed to be, 7 or 8% to make their nut, so to speak, and it was 1. That's a problem.
That's a huge problem. And that is the flip side of this low interest rate environment, that savers are – you were just taking money out of the savers and – taking it over and putting it in somebody else's pocket. And it is making this pension issue, which is huge, not only for state and local government, but it's also huge for certain corporations and other organizations that have legacy pension plans. They can't earn enough to pay their participants who are living longer than they assumed even in the beginning.
So it's a mathematical certainty we're not paying people that we've made promises to, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be good that we tell them sort of early? I mean, honestly, who's going to go for the plan to go, let's don't tell them until like the end when they've got no chance to make the money up and they'll be homeless. I don't get the plan, and I'm frustrated. I really thought we were going to take, not this panel, but I actually thought, we were going to end up having something happen after the election where Democrats and Republicans are going, okay, let's knock this off for the next 60 days, and we got to do something that's right. And wow, I'm surprised, but you guys are. I'm so gullible. I think people are actually going to do this stuff. Ay, ay, ay. Okay. We've almost run out of time, but there was a couple of things I did want to ask. Commercial real estate. And I really don't know the answer to this one, but I know that there's a ton of debt that's about to have, it's coming due. And
Retail.
Pardon me?
Retail, a particular office?
All of the above. I mean, say $1.5 trillion of debt in the next 4 years where the maturity date happens, and that's the worst of the worst loan. It was made at the peak of the market, so it probably has the least teeth originally. And I wanted to know, first of all, is that going to cause a lot of losses in the mortgage, you know, like the equivalent to the mortgage-backed security world for residential? Is it going to do that because people have collateralized debt obligations and other people have credit default swap bets against that? Is that arranged the same way? Does anybody know? EJ, I know you were involved in that world, and I know you.
Right. Well, first of all, just because a loan matures,
yes,
doesn't cause a loss.
Right.
Okay. What I think is good, first of all, if you look at the commercial equivalent of the residential mortgage-backed market, it's about $700 billion, and it's actually been shrinking at the rate of about. Roughly $100 billion a year.
The commercial?
Over the last couple of years, through a combination of refinancing and paying off, and people taking losses.
Right.
The big maturity bubble, if you will, is actually about 2 years out.
Right.
And I think it's the number itself is pretty manageable. When you talk about trillions of dollars of maturities, the bulk of that is actually sitting in the banks. And contrary to, maybe some other people's opinions, the banks are actually in pretty good shape. Roughly 85% of the banking assets in the United States are held by the top 25 banks.
Okay.
And those top 25 banks... have shrunk their real estate at a pretty rapid pace. Now, our bank is a little different than most, but since 2007, our commercial real estate has dropped from $16.5 billion to $11
billion. Okay.
And so I personally don't think it's the kind of, Armageddon that you read about in the press.
Okay. Appreciate that.
But I'd love to hear an alternative opinion.
I'm not knowledgeable enough to give one. I'm watching auction.com auction off the notes at a discount. I figure they're in business because some lender can't get what they're owed. And there's a listing next door to a building that I bought that was bought for $950 plus, and I bought it for $319. And a lender just took back a $3.6 million loan that they haven't been getting paid on for a while, and they listed it at $1.5 million. So I'm just physically seeing that'll put a dent in your balance sheet there, you know.
Well, but you don't know if that dent was incurred the day that it doesn't necessarily occur the day that they put that note out. Sean, you mentioned reserves. In 08 and 9 and 10, banks built enormous reserves, and that's frankly why we had part of the reason we had TARP. Part of the reason we had the stress test, and after the stress test, banks had to go out and raise a whole bunch of equity. And so a lot of the accounting for that is you build the reserve up. When you sell the note, you charge it down and you pull that out of the reserve. So a lot of those losses were actually recognized in 08, 9, and 10.
Okay.
I think that's a really important point. You showed all of that negative equity in the chart and all the negative equity reports you see from CoreLogic. And I think one thing that's really important to understand is that negative equity sits on homeowners' balance sheets, but a lot of that's been written down on the bank's balance sheets, right? So when the bank writes that loan down, the homeowner doesn't get that reduction, right? And, so this translates into our day-to-day life, right? You see a neighbor that gets... principal balance modification, and it cuts their principal in half. And you talk to them, and it turns out they had a pay option arm, worst of the worst loan, But it makes perfect sense because that loan traded for pennies on the dollars years ago, and the person that just gave them a principal balance reduction just recognized a huge gain because they actually reduced it to an amount more than what they bought it for. And it's now performing again. So that big negative equity number sits on homeowners still, and I think it hurts the economy because the economy is consumer-driven, but it's not necessarily a problem at the banks to the same degree.
Okay. Let's just do one question, one answer for everybody. We'll start on my right. And okay. I'm just trying to think of the right pessimist or optimist for the next 12 months for our industry, and a short reason why.
Well, I'm extremely optimistic, and maybe that's just my nature, but I think we've actually seen the worst of the times for us. I think moving forward, unless the fiscal cliff we fall off of.
No one cares.
I don't think that's going to happen. And so I think we're poised for good growth, not, you know, extreme growth, but good growth. Okay. So I'm positive on it.
So overall, I'm optimistic about real estate, especially with a decent return on investment. That matters a lot more to me than comps. And, you know, the one thing is I do believe in that theory of a black swan or unexpected events. And I think we have real structural problems and the likelihood of maybe not the fiscal cliff, but something coming that's bad, I think, is still a real possibility. So I'm bearish, or, you know, I'm not that optimistic overall in terms of I think we have some rough days ahead for the economy. But if I think about where I want my money to actually be, I want it to be in real assets that I think I can get a real return on, and that's probably real estate, among maybe a couple of others.
We're going to skip Rick. Go right ahead.
I'm more optimistic than pessimistic, but within a certain context. I think we're in for what I would call a sawtooth recovery. We're probably a year away from having inventory levels for properties that feel not like we're in a period of oversupply, but between foreclosures starting up again in a lot of parts of the country and new home builders starting up again, I think at some point we're going to see enough supply that prices go back down a little bit, and it's going to take us a couple of years to work through the backlog of distressed inventory that we have. To Sean's point, the economy is still relatively weak. Historically, what I've been able to determine is that until you see unemployment rates getting down somewhere between 6 to 6.5%, you're not going to see a huge, huge upswing in terms of home purchasing. So I think it's going to take us a couple of years, again, to work our way through that until unemployment rates come back down. The way I phrased it to somebody earlier today is that the housing market is in recovery, but it's much like a patient who's been in intensive care for the last few years. So feeling better, but not quite ready to run a triathlon.
Okay. Sarah?
I, too, am fairly optimistic. I think that we're seeing returns finally on investment in real estate. I think that moving forward, the months following the election are going to be extremely critical in terms of investor attitude and how people will choose to move forward. And I think that depending on the person who is elected, my optimism may shrink a bit. But
we've been so politically correct. That's great.
I would hope that that moving forward we can see more growth. I think that the maturation of the baby boomers is certainly something that's out there. I think it's going to be an extreme effect on the housing market as we see people looking for a different kind of lifestyle, a different place, and being able to afford that kind of lifestyle with the kind of investment that they need to make in the economy and the kind of investment they need to make to keep them moving and viable and to keep the economy viable.
Well, we just went through a pretty traumatic experience, right? We had a epic bubble in a core aspect of our economy in residential real estate. It's been very, very important to our economy now. for well over 30 years. It became the epicenter of this gigantic pricing credit distortion. And it's only been recovering now for about 6 years. I think expecting it to recover in only 6 years is a lot to expect. And this is happening with the federal government and the Federal Reserve throwing everything in the kitchen sink at it. So if they continue to do that, I think we'll see the same rate of recovery that we're seeing, which is starting to feel a lot better than it has before. But I think the fundamental question is, can we afford to continue to maintain this level of support for the industry? We have an economy which is like an airplane running at close to stall speed, very vulnerable to a shock, as Sean was pointing out. So I think those are our challenges, that we have to maintain this level of support, even to continue the level of recovery that we're getting, and we're vulnerable to shocks, fiscal cliff, oil price shock, a number of things. So I'd like to be optimistic, but I think we put ourselves in a very vulnerable spot.
So, you know, it's optimism is relative, right? So given what we've all gotten used to, I say I'd be guardedly optimistic. I mean, we have all the long list of things that could go wrong. You know, we do see employment very slowly, gradually improving. And really, to me, that's the key thing. The thing that worries me the most is probably that one of the things that has worked reasonably well has been a big improvement in exports. And I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that. Europe's now in recession. Asia, it's hard to tell exactly what's going on, but some people say it's slowing down considerably. And we're still a big commodity exporter. We're still a big agricultural exporter. We're still a big energy producer. So, you know, I worry about what is the, when you're trying to grow an economy by using productivity improvement rather than adding leverage, it just strikes me as a much slower rate of growth, right? Because you've got to have managerial, technical innovation has to drive the growth rather than just adding leverage. So, yeah, I think we're going to grow. We probably won't go into another recession, but it's not going to be any great, fantastic growth rate. And ultimately, you need employment to hold up real estate prices.
Well, the beauty of being the last person on the panel is I get to say I agree with everything everybody else said. But I, too, am optimistic, and it is because I have very low expectations. And if you've charged off as much as I have since 07, the fact that I'm only charging this much off today makes me very happy. Some of my options may actually be back in the money next year. No, but I am cautiously optimistic like the rest of the panel. I think it is a slow recovery, and I think we all need to expect that we have a few more years of slow growth.
I want to thank all of you. It's been, to me, a special night with some special characters. Thank you very, very much. Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, California Property Solvers, Coldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate, Elite Auctions, For Investors by Investors, In a Day Development, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts Incorporated, Keller Williams of Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Lievis Associates, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limo, Realty 411 Magazine, Real Wealth Network, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Association of Realtors, John Reisinger Photography, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA, Wilson Investment Properties, Tony Alvarez, Weston South Coast Plaza, and Winning in Tough Times LLC. See iSurvivedRealEstate.com for the video from the live event.